Hi, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I am your host, Jessica Concepcion, and today we have two special guests joining us all the way from Oakland, California, from an amazing nonprofit called Children Rising. Children Rising is an educational nonprofit founded in 2001. They are devoted to ensuring that every young child gets a fair chance to learn in school and succeed in life. They do this by mobilizing community support for struggling elementary school children living in Oakland's lowest income neighborhoods. They concentrate their efforts on three programs that provide individualized reading and math support from trained, cared, volunteer tutors and support for families of children enrolled in their programs. Welcome to the show, Mardina Wade Green, Program Director of the Path to Math, and Eric Steckel, Communications Director of Children Rising. It's such a pleasure to have you both here today for this conversation.
Hi, Jessica. Hi. Thank you for inviting us here.
Yeah, thank you, Jessica.
So happy to have you. Yes. And before we jump into our topic of the day, I would love to hear what both of you would recommend if someone was visiting your city, Oakland. What would you recommend they do immediately for fun? Or what's the restaurant you'd recommend for all the foodies?
Well, I would recommend going to eat at the Oakland Tribune's Pierre Pierre restaurant, owned by a young African-American gentleman. He has the flavors that you're just not going to find anywhere else. He uses spices from everywhere, Jamaican, all across the board. And it is delicious. The service is good, and the price is good. And I tell you, they wait on you hand, and I want to say lap, because they will put the napkin in your lap when you take a seat.
Oh, really? Oh, that's fun. Oh, that sounds good. Now I'm hungry.
Yeah, I haven't been there, but I'm going to give that one a go. You know, if you come to the Bay Area, we have such a large and diverse population, especially Asian population. And I grew up, my aunt was a missionary in Vietnam. And so at a young age, I was introduced to Vietnamese cuisine. And my go-to for Vietnamese here is Tay Ho in downtown Oakland. And to me, it's just comfort food. And my wife was not feeling well over the weekend. It was cold and rainy, and we got pho. Pho is it's just noodle soup is giving it discredit. It's when you're sick, you're cold and tired, pho just feeds us all. And they've got a great menu too. So if you want to try Vietnamese food in Oakland, Tay Ho is the place to go.
I'm going to need the location so I can put it in the show notes just to recommend to people. Oh, I love that. And we have the Asian, we have the Jamaican, Caribbean represented here. Taste buds are represented. That's awesome.
Let's just stop now and go eat.
Right. Let's stop and just go. I love it. So just to jump in, how did Children Rising get started?
You know, Children Rising, it was called by the founder a faith-inspired group. Randy Roth was a pastor at First Covenant Church in Oakland, and he was the senior pastor there for about 15 years. And the pastors of Oakland were actually called together by then superintendent of schools, Dennis Chaconis. And he said to the pastors, we need your churches to help our community schools. Wow. We are languishing. And at the time, First Covenant Church had a school adoption program with one of the neighborhood schools. And but Randy took this plea to heart. And about a year later, he wrestled over it, and he felt the call to get out of pulpit ministry and into the world of nonprofit, educational nonprofits. He really felt the call to rally the faith community to get out of the pews on Sunday and into the schools throughout the week. At the time, just to do whatever the schools needed us to do to help, whether it's playground equipment or teacher appreciation or whatnot. But that's how it got started. It was really to get the faith community to uplift the Oakland schools. Over time, we've gotten better and more refined and focused in how that looks, and we'll talk about that more. But essentially, it was, how do we get the faith community to uplift these kids? And we've been doing that since 2001, and it's a blessing to be able to do that with Children Rising. Great folks and friends like Margina.
That's so amazing. I love that that it came from the public first, asking for that help from, and the need. That means that the church was really, you know, a bright light to begin with, that they would say, hey, we need you guys to be here, a part, be present in the community, in the children's life. And could you just let the audience know just a little bit more about the demographics of Oakland and just the population that you guys are serving?
Yeah, we are predominantly in what are called Title I schools. What that means is these are the community schools in probably the lowest income and typically the lowest performing neighborhoods in Oakland. So we get invited in by the schools to open up these tutoring clinics in reading and math and homework. The children we serve are predominantly Black and Brown. We do have a fair number of Arab American children and others, but predominantly Black and Brown. These children are typically already two grade levels behind in reading or math in the second grade. They're eager, loving kids. They want to succeed in school, but sometimes they just haven't had the attention or the little extra help they need to get their academic success back on track.
And what is it that right now, how is the program structured?
Margina, you can talk the best about the program structure. Go for it.
Well, our program structure, I'm the director of the Path to Math program. We do have a Succeeding by Reading program and a Family Bridge program. But the Path to Math is what I live, so I can definitely talk about that one. It is where we assess the students that the principal and teachers have identified as one or two grades behind. Sometimes we get kids who are further behind than that. But we are tailoring services to them to meet the student exactly where they are. So it's not like a blanket class that we're running. Each kid gets their own assessment and their own tutor to work at the space where they are. So we have lots of tools and things that we can talk about later, but we have tools and training provided to the tutors and a constant, you know, in-classroom presence.
And how often are the tutors coming into the school a week?
We were serving kids at least once a week, and now we know that digging deeper with them is really going to make the difference and help us turn the corner every year to make it a little more progress. So we are seeing most of our kids twice a week.
That's awesome.
And in a few cases, we are seeing a few of them three times a week.
Wow. And could you share a time when a student's grades improved because of their tutor and the impact it made on the student?
Eric, you want to take that one first?
You know, I've been a tutor in math for several years, and I can just share with you a young child I've been with since October. And boy, the first month or two was difficult. We just weren't quite on the same page. And the importance of the tutoring, the relationship with the tutor is absolutely, you can't overestimate it. Once that relationship is formed and really bonded, suddenly that's when the magic begins to happen and the learning accelerates. The first couple of months, the young lad was we weren't hitting off, and I know he was struggling in the classroom. He speaks English as a second language. I think he was actually born in Cuba.
Okay.
So Spanish is first language. And it was just hard. But sometime in January, it turned on its head. And this light bulb went off on in his head. And it was like he suddenly wanted to come and see me. He wanted to take the time to be tutored. And now when he comes off the playground ready for tutoring, he comes in and gives me a big hug. He's ready to go. And I see Margina laughing. If you had told us both this 3 months ago, we would have been shaking our heads. Like, it was not working out. So it's still to be seen where he's going to go. But you have that magic moment where you're like, goodness, I got through this kid. I didn't stop. I didn't give up. And I think sometimes the kids want to test you, see if you'll give up. Maybe they've been abandoned before, or they've been promised something before and they didn't get it. And I think what's beautiful about this program is these tutors come in week after week. They do not give up on the kids.
That's true.
And when they realize that, they build a trust in that relationship. And I think that's when the learning really accelerates. Because we were tutoring them before. It was fighting. Now we're doing it together.
Wow. So you really saw that change.
Yeah. Margina, you've seen him with me, right?
Yeah. I was just going to say, Jessica, that it's our expectation and our experience that once a child is paired with a tutor, the student will progress, if not for the sole reason of that relationship that is expecting something of him to learn, to come into class, and he's going to gain something, you know. So some are faster than others based on their skills, but nonetheless, students are progressing in math, socially, relationally, communicatively, and there are many stories of trials and triumphs that our tutors could tell you. But I will share one little girl who, you know, after we took the time to get to know her, because she kept holding back. She didn't want to participate. And after we had, you know, two or three conversations with her, I learned that she was afraid of being embarrassed. That was all holding her back. And so once we assured her that nobody's there to embarrass her, we're not going to call her out, we're not going to say what she missed, you know, she doesn't get her grade published or anything like that. We don't even grade our students, actually. So once we showed her our dedication, she's now attending with a smile, and she's, you know, got pep in her step when she comes to class, and she's hitting us a high five, you know. But the majority of students, you know, have a common denominator, and that's lack of knowledge and understanding basic math and skills. We can fix that, you know. So there are others who are like second and third grade on a kindergarten level, and then the gap doesn't end there. There's fourth and fifth graders who are on kindergarten and first grade levels.
Wow.
But, you know, one child begins at the school year with us on kindergarten level. And since October, October to now, they're performing at second grade level. So this is just because of the consistency of the tutor and the students being present and the platform and tools that we use to teach math and administered with love and respect to the students.
That's amazing. It sounds like you're calling them to rise to like an expectation and encouraging their potential.
Yeah. One thing I'd also like to sort of underscore, Margina talked about the training that our tutors get. Now, maybe one thing that wasn't clear is we're volunteers. The tutors that we recruit and train are volunteers.
Wow.
But we provide very thorough training for literacy reading tutors and our math tutors, which means that they're ready to go in from the first day and succeed. But on top of that, we have clinic coordinators that are there on location to help support and guide the tutors as well. And when there is a difficult period of time, which happens, that support and that training, the tutors can draw on and know that, okay, it's tough right now, but I just need to stay the course with this child because they need me. And I think that's extremely important with this program and is what helps make it so special and so effective.
That's amazing. And I'm sure just having experienced tutors around can help the new tutors just be encouraged to stick it through and not give up.
Yeah.
We have a lot of tutors that return year to year, year after year.
Yeah, prior to COVID, our return rate was over 70%.
Oh, wow.
And that's significant because our tutors spend 2 hours a week, minimum 2 hours a week, week after week. It's not a small ask. And they come back year after year. We've got one tutor who's been with us since day one.
Wow.
He's been with us for over 20 years.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. He's probably a huge advocate in telling all his friends and families about the program.
Yeah, he's a special one.
So, you know, a lot of people might be asking themselves, how come these children are experiencing such delays? For example, you mentioned there's second graders who are on kindergarten level, and then also fourth and fifth graders that are on, you know, kindergarten level. And when we think about like what you're learning in kindergarten and first grade, it's really the basic, you know, alphabet, right? And learning your numbers, learning how to count money and things like this. What are some vulnerabilities that exist within a community and family which tend to negatively impact a child's focus in school?
Well, some children, sadly, experience trauma before they even get to school. And it's what's on their minds when they get to school and they have to sit down and be quiet and pay attention. But they're still streaming the trauma that they've experienced before school or something that happened that night that could not allow them to sleep. So a lot of kids, they have... I'll call it the babysitter, which is the video game, and they're under the covers, and they tell us that, like, why are you sleepy? Well, I was playing video games until I just, you know, couldn't anymore. And I said, well, you know, I was trying to give them a scenario of, hey, you can stop video games at 9 o'clock, and then you can, you know, think about other things or read a book until 10 and go to sleep. One little girl told me, I can't stop. And so just not having that direction at home that must end certain things like that is really detrimental because the kids come to school sleepy. They're, you know, some kids are late and then some kids are hungry. But when they get to school, they haven't eaten breakfast. So, you know, we try to scramble and get them something. But, you know, the fuel is not in their bodies by then. So sometimes we have to just take the student where they are. And if they're sleepy, we try to do math standing up or walking the hallways, you know, and there's little patterns on the floor that, you know, add different things or teach different shapes. So that keeps them, you know, upright and thinking. But these things negatively impact a child and their ability to think and learn and concentrate. One student said, I couldn't come to school because it was cold and I didn't have a coat. Can you imagine missing school, 2 weeks of school, because you don't have a coat? These things are so fixable. You know, there's, you know, one warm coat, there's all these other organizations, and then there's, you know, resources at the school that maybe they know about, maybe they don't, but don't take advantage of. But, you know, that's not even a fair trade to miss school because you don't have a coat.
Yeah.
And they're not realizing how devastating this is. But we can tell you that if a child shows up for school, he will learn.
I'd also like to point out that there's so many sort of different things and sometimes combined together that are coming into it. As I mentioned earlier, most of these children are in the poor neighborhoods of our city. I've never had to live being poor or in poverty, but I can only imagine how much stress that puts on an entire family when just putting a roof over the head, food on the table, keeping multiple jobs is on the parents, and that has to filter down into the children, and they feel it in their bones.
Yeah. And the stress, you know, the family member who's working full time, three jobs, two jobs, and the venting that happens, you know, I you know, it's, I think it's common to vent when you're home. So then all that, all their venting and stress is aired in the home, and the children sometimes internalize all that.
Yeah. Yes. And think it's their fault.
And they think it's their fault somehow. These the innocent children, 4 or 5 years old. And they also, I think, you know, when you love your parent, you want the best for them too. Just, you know, and you, you know, I'm sure sometimes they think they're trying to problem solve in their head. Maybe, you know, what if I do this? Or, you know, and that's not even mentioning whether if they're an only child, if there's three other children in the household, 5 other children, you know, that all plays a role in the type of direct support a child might be receiving. If the parent already doesn't have time, these children aren't really, you know, being poured into every single day, you know, like, how are you feeling? What's been going on in school? No one's asking these questions.
Yeah.
And we, it's important also to state that we don't blame the parents for this either.
No.
They don't want to be, you know, working two jobs and scrambling to put a roof overhead and food on the plate. They don't want to feel the stress of coming home at 9 o'clock and being like, did you do your homework or not? Can I help you do it? It's, you know, it's hard. And until you've walked a mile in that person's shoes, you can't know. You can't know what it must feel like. And every parent that I've had the pleasure to talk to, they are so glad that someone is there to support them and their child. And they're just there. It's like there's a palpable relief knowing that there's somebody out there that wants to come alongside them and help their child as well, even if it's just for that year.
I love that you mentioned that, because I think it is, it's true. You know, nobody, it's hard already, I think, to ask for help, but to know that someone, an organization so graciously is present. You guys have been there for over 20 years in the community. So it's like really the hands and feet of Jesus, you know, for these families. And like you said, like, it's not to blame families. It's more of just like situational awareness of what's actually happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And we try, Margina does such a good job of making sure that the new tutors who are being trained hear that message loud and clear. And I think almost to a person, when they get there and experience the tutoring with the child, I think they nod their head and get it then. It's like, yeah, these kids are eager. So let's not play a blame game. Let's just do what needs to be done to help the kids, help the families in any way we can, help their kids, and together we're gonna nurture these kids in a circle of care. You know, that it's the families and the caregivers, it's the schools, and now it's these tutors that are coming in, and we're just enveloping these children in a circle of nurturing love, and with the goal of getting them to succeed in school, and when that happens, they have a much better chance of living a successful life.
Right.
I love that. And could you give kind of like how our attitudes towards our community, you know, the blame game versus having a mindset of I'm coming alongside you to walk out, you know, this season of your family's life. You know, could you talk about just the difference that one change of attitude makes for someone when they're volunteering?
Well, I think for many tutors, it's eye-opening, because some of them live in secluded places, or, you know, they are not in these neighborhoods. They don't, it's not their regular grocery store they'd go to. It's not their regular neighborhood. And you know, just kind of going back to the training is, you know, I try to, like, I don't sugarcoat anything. I just talk about the real world. And some of the tutors, you know, are eager to be helpful, while some are like, I've never experienced anything like that, you know. So you might have to repeat your question a little bit, but that's what was on my mind at the time when you said what you said.
Right? No, I love that. It's just more of differentiating between the different attitude and what the result is from when you switch your mindset from like the blame game, like blaming parents mm-hmm. for their situation mm-hmm. versus
yeah.
having a more of a eye-opening, compassionate way of seeing the situation and coming alongside the family.
Yeah, that's certainly something we try to get across, especially in tutoring. Like, before I put any tutor in front of our kids, like, they really have to pass that test. because this is not about blame. This is not about pointing out why that child doesn't know. You're not. You don't know. You're not a professional at that. You know, we're not even there to figure out why the child hasn't learned, you know, how to count to, you know, 100. But we're there to make sure that child can count to 100 when we leave there. So, so there's no, you know, we make it very clear. There's no blame game. And just like Eric said, this is not about placing parents on notice or the environment. And a lot of times, you know, it's not the parent. They have caregivers. And some of our kids are not housed. You know, some of our kids are foster kids. So everybody is not a cookie cutter of how you can point your finger at somebody else, you know, but this is how we can help move these kids along.
What are some of the consequences when students actually fall behind in math and reading?
Well, some would say it's a pipeline to prison, right? Immediate consequences, like where our kids are right now, is the price is the lack of confidence, the self-worth, and the hope that they don't have. You know, they don't know about their tomorrows. They can't envision becoming a person my age. They can envision them becoming a teenager's age, right? They can envision like the next step. So that's how we have to treat them. What is your next step, honey? You know, so it's a spirit crusher to know or to not know something that seems like the rest of the class knows. Behavior problems often are results of feeling like an outcast or the one that's not smart in the class. And usually the one that somebody might label somebody not smart is brilliance mm-hmm. because they're probably not being challenged enough to the point that they would care about learning what you're trying to teach them. So that's even the challenge to find out what level they're on, because we're learning now where some of them tested is not really where they are, because they're brilliant. They just didn't care about that test. But now once we knocked it up a bunch and everything, we are learning that you do know your times tables. You're right. Addition is boring to you because you got this, you know. Mm-hmm. But when a child feels successful, they will deflect and redirect their energy to things that get them the attention. So it's the same way. If they don't get the attention, they're going to direct themselves in such a way so they are getting attention. Then they end up being, you know, the class clown or something, or the one that gets sent out of the room all the time. But it's detrimental to the kids if they don't have the confidence that they need, mm-hmm. you know, that they can do something, they can achieve this. We try to make sure we incentivize every step.
There you have it, folks. I hope you have enjoyed part one with this amazing nonprofit, Children Rising. If you would like to follow along on their journey, head over to @ Children Rising on Instagram. If you have been enjoying the content, of this podcast, make sure to subscribe and leave a review to help others find the show too. As always, stay beautiful and have a great rest of your day or evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Bye-bye.